So you're with the Resistance?
Hello, what have we here?
I'm a big deal in the Resistance.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 32. Hope you all enjoy our last show, which was, what, 2 or 3 weeks ago? But this week, it's all about the new Rogue One trailer. As always, I'm Mikey B, joined by my co-host, Tanya.
Hey, it's great to be back. Oh my god.
I know, right? And this week, we also have Mikal with us.
Hey, guys.
If you want to get involved in the conversation, you guys can get a hold of us on Twitter at @rradiopodcast, leave a comment on our Facebook, or send us an email through our website, resistanceradio.net. Or you can leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypeable.com. Also, today's podcast is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/resistanceradio. With over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player, get the latest Star Wars audiobook for free, including the new Ahsoka book that just came out. I'm excited for that book. We also have t-shirts and buttons available for sale up on our website, so feel free to check those out. Hey guys, how you all doing today?
Good.
Yeah, I'm pretty good as well. I've been playing catch-up all week. Jet lag has been kicking my ass because I got a cold on Sunday of Comic-Con, which has just... The jet lag's fed off the cold, and the cold has fed off the jet lag, and it's kind of mutated into misery and despair, basically.
I can understand that. I'm excited. I've been eating solid foods for about a week now, so I'm like... I'm feeling good. Woo! Feeling better. Although they did give me, when I had my tonsils out, they gave me liquid Vicodin, which was really interesting to take. So, yeah, I was pretty loopy for about 2 weeks before I can start speaking or anything. So I'm glad to be back. I know, right?
Well, I read the Ahsoka book. That's my, thing. I got an arc of it, and it's good.
Yeah, see, I actually haven't. I started to read it, but I've been so, messed up with drugs that I'm, it's so difficult for me to concentrate. I get, a paragraph, and I'm, what did I just read? It is bad. So I think I'm going to have to get it as an audiobook and just kind of get through it soon. Anyway, let's move on to the news. So while we were gone, Star Wars The Old Republic has released a new cinematic trailer called Betrayed for their latest expansion, Knights of the Eternal Throne. We kind of briefly talked about this with Evan, when he was on the show from JotoCast, when they announced the Knights of the Eternal Throne as the latest expansion, which will be coming out December 2nd. It's a 6-minute trailer, guys. I know you had a chance to watch it. What do you guys think of the trailer, first of all?
Pretty good. I mean, most of the Old Republic trailers are good. So it's pretty much par. Well, it's pretty much what I'd expect at this point from Old Republic trailers. But also, it was nice to finally get an Old Republic trailer centered on two female characters for once. Not gonna lie.
We had Satele Shannon, and she's, one of, the lead Jedi Master, and she's female.
I agree, both characters.
That's true.
And mother-daughter relationships, which are lacking in Star Wars.
Oh yeah,
someone wrote an article. I think Jonah Marie Macias maybe wrote an article about that, and it's, so true that, mothers and daughters aren't really a thing. So it was really...
And the previous expansion...
Yeah. I'm sorry.
The previous expansion dealt with her Valen's brothers, too. So, these two expansions back-to-back that lead off one of another literally deal with that whole family, which is pretty cool. So...
Cool.
I'm excited for it. So, yeah, this comes out December 2nd. Feel free to check it out at SWTOR.com, and also check out the trailer. It's actually really, really good. Speaking of Old Republic news, fans have created a petition via change.org to have Lucasfilm not only make the story of the Old Republic video game canon, but to have them develop a Netflix-style show during the time frame of 3,000 years before the Battle of Yavin, which is when the Old Republic takes place. Arguments for this is basically that 3,000 years before A New Hope, doesn't matter what they do, it's not really going to affect any story that they're working on going forward with the cinematic storyline. But at the time of this recording, they have over 46,000 signatures on change.org.
It's kind of funny to me that that's on change.org. other petition sites that aren't, dealing with, important social issues.
I know. Well, But you know, it's but you know, in the extended universe in the EU, this was definitely a pivotal point in the Star Wars timeline. It's the Jedi Civil War, the fall of Revan, and actually we have a Revan Black Series character coming out. So there's definitely a lot of lore and stuff that people love during this time frame. So I definitely see if they did a Netflix style series and they don't want to worry about tying everything they do with like Rebels and other TV shows, like kind of tie everything together, like they brought Saw Gerrera into Rogue One, doing something in this time period isn't really going to affect anything that happens. You know, especially if they work with characters like Darth Bane and stuff like that, where they're just mentioned in passing in like in the newer stuff that happens more current in that timeline that they're working with. So what do you guys think about that? 46,000 people want them to make a show out of this time frame.
I mean, that's pretty considerable number of fans, but also I don't know if that's enough either to like get them to make anything yet. Not to say that that number won't continue to go up or that I don't necessarily want to see it myself, because like you said, 3,000 years before the Battle of Yavin is a fairly safe time period to be playing in if they were going to go to a Netflix series or something like that. But the other thing that we also have to remember is that at the moment, those conversations about a Star Wars series going to ABC are also still in development.
Yep.
So that's
very true.
It's all going to come down to, it'd be great to see a Netflix series. I think it's something that would work incredibly well on the Netflix platform, especially because it will allow for playing around with a lot darker themes and stuff that does you don't have to contend with network television, but also it's Disney, and Disney kind of owns the whole thing now. They're gonna want it to go onto a Disney owned channel,
like ABC.
So
well, I don't think those two things are exclusive. I mean, you have like Marvel obviously has Netflix and ABC offerings, so
That's kind of
yeah. And also Marvel has more Netflix than it does ABC, especially with the, you know, demise of Agent Carter on ABC.
Yeah,
so
too soon,
you know. I know.
Well,
it's, and it's kind of sad. I know.
I mean, it's also true because like I don't know, it's I don't know how much Star Wars wants to expand into TV. like I was kind of just becoming a Marvel fan when like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was, I mean, like, I was a fan before, but, like, really becoming a like, involved person when Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was coming out, so I didn't follow that whole development. So I don't know how much that was, like, a given, but, like, with Star Wars, it seems to me like they've always been a little bit reluctant to discuss it, you know, and it's such a big property, and everybody's like, oh, of course it's gonna go, like, the Marvel Netflix route. So I don't know if they want to, like, do the thing that Marvel's doing, which is like you just have like all the shows on all the platforms. They might just want to keep it to one or two. But I feel like your odds of having a Knights of the Old Republic is better on Netflix, because that's not as dependent on views, whereas I think with Star Wars they would have to do something connected to an era that we're familiar with already, you know, because otherwise, I mean, like, it's like, I doubt they'll want to advertise, like, 3,000 years before Star Wars, you know, whereas with Netflix, they can do that, and, like, it can be more about the themes.
It can become that kind of, it can become that hidden kind of thing that pops up that people are like, oh, this is really good, and becomes, like, that show that can sit there for a long time before it really builds that fan base on
exactly.
Netflix. Whereas for broadcast, they need to get a lot of eyeballs on it right away.
Right.
And I agree, you know. If you look at the article that I linked to it from about talking about the fan petition, you know, George Lucas had previously had a live action show called Star Wars Underworld, and you know, in pre-production they had a bunch of scripts for it,
like a million scripts, right? Like,
yeah, they had a bunch of them, yeah, and it also had a lot of the tie-in with Star Wars 1313, which is a game that LucasArts was working on right before the whole Disney purchase, which they then killed the game. So there's definitely, you know, there's definitely not. The idea of a live-action series with not only ABC, but Netflix is not something that's far out of the realm. And just having the fact that, literally, I kid you not, I put the notes together for this probably 2 days ago. There was 41,000 signatures. Now there's 46,000 signatures on this petition. So I can only imagine it growing fairly quickly. So that, you know, I definitely think it would be great. I've played the game. I know the guys at JodoCast play the game, and when the expansion comes out, I think we're going to do a live stream with, I'll be doing it with the guys from JodoCast playing through the expansion. So it'll be kind of fun, but it's definitely an area where it's not going to affect what they're currently working on film wise. So I feel like it would be a safe time for them to make a live action series. And there's other sci-fi series that have such high production value that I feel like they can do a high production value for a Star Wars live action versus just, you know, Lucasfilm animation like they do now for Rebels and that they did for, you know, Clone Wars.
The thing is, I don't feel like they're going to be, I mean, not to like bash on anyone who signed this petition at all, but I don't feel like the people at Star Wars, like Kathleen Kennedy, is going to go like, wait, you mean people are interested in Knights of the Old Republic? Wait, you mean people want a Star Wars TV show? Like, you know, I would actually hazard that they have plans already and they're,
I'm sure,
you know, in the pipeline or whatever. Not, you know, and it's still good to like let studios know what fans are into, but I doubt that like this will change anything like practically, because I'm sure if they think that they're going to make money off of it, they're going to make it.
Yeah, the only thing I can think that these things do, and you've seen these types of petitions help out. Like, I remember, I don't know if you remember the TV show Chuck.
Yeah.
This type of thing got an extra season out of the show, which is, I thought was awesome because I love the show. But it's one of those things where it might just bring light to, I'm sure this is on the burner there. You know, the whole Lucasfilm story group, you know, Kathleen Kennedy and all them, they have so many things that they're planning. And you can see it, like everything from the Star Wars show that they do now to, you know, Rebels Recon, you know, that Andy Gutierrez does in addition to the Star Wars show. Like, they are doing so much now with Star Wars, which is great. Like, you can go into any store and buy Star Wars merchandise now, whereas, like, you know, 5 years ago, you know, you find like a Star Wars section, you're like, this is the coolest stuff ever, you know, if you're a Star Wars fan. Now it's everywhere again, which is great. Like, I love it, but it's just one of those things where this is the only thing I can think of to do is simply bring it more to the, you know, move it up on the list of things of what they might work on next, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. All right. While we are also out, Star Wars Rebels has since premiered, and we are now 4 episodes in, with episode 5 showing on Saturday into season 3, which I will tell you, I think season 3 of Rebels is absolutely awesome. What do you guys think of it?
Yes.
Exactly. Episode 1 and 2, I would almost treat it as a single episode. Quick rundown of it. Ezra's mission, Ezra is leading a mission, and it kind of goes awry due to his reckless leadership. Kanan discovers the Bendu, which we saw in the trailers, and learns more about the balance of the Force, not just the light or dark side. And Thrawn emerges as the new threat. So right from episode 1, we get Thrawn coming out as our new threat for our Rebels. What do you guys think of these first 2 episodes?
I loved them. I also saw them in a room with a load of Star Wars fans. These were obviously the 2 episodes that they showed at Star Wars Celebration Europe, if you managed to get into the Star Wars Rebels panel. So I've been sitting on what I've known from these episodes for like months.
For a while now. I know.
Me. Yeah, seriously. Yeah, it's been
like, so now we can talk. Now we can talk about it a little bit, Donna. Now we can. What'd you think about it?
I absolutely loved it. A lot of this season, funnily enough, Michal can attest to this, a lot of season 3 so far has been me going, Ezra, no, don't do the thing. So, especially in this, these first 2 episodes, I was like, Ezra's kind of going off half-cocked and he's like really endangering people massively. Like, not just in the crew, like everyone. He's being completely reckless. And yeah, so it was, I get really frustrated with Ezra a lot of the time, but I also thought the scenes between Kanan and the Bendu were really interesting as well, and what was happening with the holocron, and how the Bendu basically has no stake in either the Jedi or the Sith really succeeding. He's just there in the middle. I really, really liked how the Bendu kind of guided Kanan for being able to see, but not see. So being able to use his power with the Force in order to see things around him, but it doesn't, like, miraculously restore his sight. It just develops his powers a little bit more, which I really, really like that. And obviously Thrawn was so great, seeing Thrawn. I love that.
Yeah, no, Thrawn was a good addition to it, but I agree. I think the Bendu is probably my favorite part, just because Ezra really made me... Ezra, this entire season so far, I'm kind of like, just pay attention, listen to somebody else. Like, you don't know everything, you're still a kid. Like, it's kind of annoying, but I think the Bendu and having Kanan realize that he's in turmoil, like, even though he's a Jedi, peace, serene, all that stuff, you know, the Bendu realizes, you know, tells him that there's a storm within him, not just about, you know, his own emotions, but about his Padawan, about Ezra. And just kind of being able, if you think of him as just literally a neutral, not between the dark, you know, the dark or light side, he is literally the eye of the storm. You know, the Bendu is right there in the middle, is peace and serene, and he helps Kanan kind of discover that even in the light side as a Jedi, which is probably my favorite part of that whole thing. Maybe it's because I also have a soft spot in my heart for all Jedi things, which maybe it's also why I like the Star Wars The Old Republic too. I get to be a Jedi with a lightsaber and run around. But yeah, I definitely think the first two episodes, Ezra, you know, I'm like, I agree with you 100%. It's like, Ezra, no, what are you doing? Like, it doesn't make sense. Stop. Like, it just, it's frustrating. But I will say, like, having Thrawn emerge as, you know, this new, cool, calculated, like, even letting him go at the very end, because that's not what they're after, it was like, wow, like, you know, he's going to come back and really hurt them later on.
Yeah, so he's...
I was excited for the first two episodes.
He's playing a long game. He's not there for, like, the instant gratification of just being able to take out a small section of Rebels. He's there to basically... He wants them all. He wants to take them all out in one go, and he's willing to play cat and mouse with them in order to get them to lead him to the Rebels, I would imagine. But, Mikal, what was the name that you had for the Bendu again?
Rock Dumbledore.
That's it, Rock Dumbledore. I love that. Mikal said that, over Facebook chat with me, and I was just crying with laughter for so long.
I will say, I liked the premiere. I wasn't crazy about it. Ezra drove me nuts. I mean, like, I'm not the only person to make this comparison by a long shot, but he's definitely Order of the Phoenix Harry, like, times a million, you know, because he has actual, like, evil powers. And it's, you know, and it's for the whole time, and it just drives me nuts. And I appreciated the nod to, like, he wants to help people, and, like, that's why he's doing this, but it's so insufferable, especially when Sabine is, like, right there, like, flying the Phantom and, like, saving their lives, like, second by second, and gets zero credit for it, and it's just, no, Lieutenant Commander Ezra, and it's just like, you know, what is this? And I like the Bendu stuff, I did, but I felt like it was a little fast, but I mean, that happens a lot in the show, I think just by nature of how long it is. And I'll say, I liked Thrawn, too, but at the end, I was like, it's awfully convenient that he just wants to, like, he's just gonna let them go. Like, that's nice. That's really convenient for our Rebels. It's not like they don't... I mean, I get it. Like, from a story level, I don't think it's totally illegitimate, but it was also like, you could also shoot them down and be done with 5, 6, 7 Rebels, you know? And, like, that would also be a good thing, you know? So I was sort of torn on the premiere, but I liked the next episode a lot more. I thought one was, a lot more kind of emotionally solid.
All right. So speaking of episode 3, quick synopsis, Darth Maul kidnaps the Ghost crew, forcing Kanan and Ezra to get the Sith holocron back from the Bendu, who has hidden it in a cave with spiders. Kanan has Ezra go into the cave, kind of like Luke in Empire Strikes Back, if you will. And he even told him to leave his lightsaber because he needs to take only what he needs. And at this point, they end up getting that holocron and they have to give it to Darth Maul, where he's going to merge it with the Jedi holocron. And we see a snippet at the end of what happens there. So, Mikal, you said you really liked this episode. Tell us what you thought about this one.
I mean, I just felt like, first of all, the cows came home a little bit for Ezra, so it wasn't like a... I mean, a lot of the time it's like, Ezra does whatever he wants, and, like, there are tiny consequences, but, like, not really, and, you know, and I felt like this was a good reckoning of what he had been going through and what he had been doing. And, I mean, I think Donya and I were also kind of just freaking out over, like, Kanan's ridiculously attractive competence.
And, like, yes. Oh, my God. Competent Kanan is, like...
Just seeing him, like, cool and calm and collected and, you know, unfazed by things was... But, like, in an earned way, I really, really appreciated it. It didn't feel like he was, like, magically one with the Force or whatever, but it felt like he had a handle on what was going on, which I really, really enjoyed. And, I mean, Maul is... I don't understand why I react the way I do to Maul, because, like, from one second to the next, he'll be like to the droids, like, kill the rest of the crew. And I'm like, oh no, that's bad. Obviously, I hate you, Maul. But then he'll be like to Ezra, like, oh, I'm looking for something more elusive. Hope. And I'm like, oh, poor baby. <It's> like, I don't get it. I'm not rooting for him, but part of me is rooting for him.
Oh, it's so true, though. I mean, I'm kind of the same a little bit. I'm like, I don't want to see Maul succeed necessarily, because also that would be bad. But there's this conflict within my emotions, because Sam Witwer just does such a good job of fleshing Maul out as a character so that you do get that conflict of, like, you get emotionally attached to him to the point where, like, you're really invested in what happens to Maul, but also you realize that Maul succeeding will mean bad things for, like, other characters that you care about. So it's a really, really difficult thing to kind of wrestle with your emotions. But I also loved episode 3 so, so, so much. Like Mikhail said, competent Kanan is, like, my new favorite thing ever. Just him being able to calmly get stuff done. Like, give me 100% more of that. I was super into it. But I also really, 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 really liked the bit where they merged the holocrons. And we got that huge tease.
Yeah, when Ezra said twin sons, like, I got chills. I really did.
Freaked out.
And sorry, go ahead.
Can we talk about that real quick? So, I loved episode 3 a lot, and I won't go into it, because you guys have hit all the things that I like about it. But let's talk about twin sons and what do you guys think Maul was looking for? Before we talk about what Ezra saw with twin sons, we know it's Tatooine, but was Maul looking for Kenobi? Was Maul looking for Luke? What is Maul looking for? He said hope, which we know A New Hope is, you know, Luke's journey in Princess Leia and Han and all that. So what do you guys think what Maul was actually looking for in that?
Had so many discussions about this, haven't we, Mikhail?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. And I like meant well, to talk to Donya about the feeling, the theory that I heard. And like we hung out at New York Comic Con on Thursday. And I meant to tell you, and then I, like, totally forgot. So I, like, texted her later, and I was like, Donya, this theory! But I'm an idiot, okay? I'm not... My Star Wars knowledge has very distinct and real gaps. So I completely missed the idea that it was Kenobi. I was like, maybe it's, like, his brother, or maybe it's Vader, or, like, could it possibly be Luke? Because I was thinking that, like, he saw Luke because Ezra saw Luke, and then I was listening to, I don't know, it was Full of Sith or one of the other podcasts, and they were like, so is probably Kenobi, and I'm like, oh, they saw the same thing, oh my god, and I love that idea that, like, they both saw Tatooine, and maybe Maul got the idea that Kenobi is there, whereas Ezra maybe felt something of Luke or didn't, but I love the idea that they were viewing the same place and the same set of information for different reasons, and that they were both coming up with the twin sons and that and the significance of that. And I love the idea that maybe Maul isn't gonna, like, maybe he's not gonna go, like, all vengeance on Kenobi. Like, maybe he's gonna do something different, you know? Like, looking for advice or something. It seems bizarre, but like, I feel like it would be really easy if he just went there and was just like, waha, I shall finish this fight, blah, blah, you know, and Obi-Wan was like, okay, cool, cut you down again, you know?
Cool story, bro, but...
Yeah. But either way, I think we're going to Tatooine, right? I mean, like, we're definitely going to go to Tatooine.
We have to be going to Tatooine. I mean, that's...
Twin Suns is Tatooine.
Yeah.
We have to.
I will say, when they merged the two holocrons, it's kind of amazing that Kanan can actually see at the time. Like, can actually see. Do you guys remember how it was super bright white and Kanan can walk in and actually see them in that kind of shadowy form?
I thought that was really interesting as well, but... I liked that a lot. Yeah, I'm not sure how that works, but it was kind of cool.
Well, my interpretation of it was that light was not like a physical light, it was the Force. So Kanan can see the Force. So he, you know, everything was being transfused with the Force at that point. Mm-hmm. So Kanan could see them, whereas everybody else, you know, was blind, basically. So that was my view of that.
I like that. I like that it kind of sort of reached out into the Force and kind of you can see through that. And a little bit clearly. Yeah. Like, I like that idea.
Because, I mean, that's what the combined holocrons are, right? Like, they're the purest idea of the Force.
It's the answers from both the dark and the light side. You know, it's the complete... They can answer any question.
It's kind of like the Bendu. It's kind of like... Mm. You know, the two holocrons combined would be the Bendu, really.
Yeah. Perfect. Now, I will say, I literally just rewatched it right now while we were talking. That's why I kind of like have been quiet. Just because I want to make sure I caught all the words that were said. So not only does Ezra mention Twin Suns, but he mentions the person who can destroy the Sith, which we know that happened. That is Luke Skywalker. You know, that's this journey that happens where he's able to redeem, you know, the person who is supposed to destroy the Sith was Anakin Skywalker. Obviously, he became Darth Vader, but it's Luke who redeems his father to destroy the Emperor and kind of put a finish to this, if you will. Mm. So, Ezra's definitely talking about Luke, but like I said, with Maul, I don't know. I feel like he's thinking about Kenobi, and this would be a perfect thing for them to kind of tackle. I feel like in the Rebel series, because we do have a comic coming out. That's going to deal with kind of Kenobi in between, you know, what happened in between episode 3 and episode 4. But I feel like this would be a perfect time to kind of mention it just because, you know, with Rogue One coming out and everything like that, where it ties into Obi-Wan Kenobi again. This is right before we already had Princess Leia in, you know, in Rebels. Like, I feel like this is a good time to bring him back up as a character. And just kind of bring him forefront to even the Rebels' thought process. Like, Kenobi's still out there, but he's refusing to leave Tatooine for some reason. They may not even know why, but, like, that's where he's at. So I personally think, like, this was a very pivotal moment, and we'll see more as the series progresses throughout the season.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like maybe the finale will have something to do with Kenobi. I mean, hopefully before then, maybe the mid-season, but, I mean, I also think that, like, we don't really need to see Luke. You know, like, Luke's a punky teenager at this point. It's like, he's basically just Ezra.
Getting power converters.
Yeah, he's got a talking station. Don't you just make me watch the deleted scenes from A New Hope, which I'd never seen before. And oh my god.
Him and Biggs at Tosche Station.
So much.
Luke is the worst. Oh my gosh, he's such a dweeb. Oh my goodness.
He is. Or, you know, here's the thing is, I feel like if we see Luke, it's going to be showing off his piloting skills, like in a T-16, something like that. Like, I don't want to see Luke, though.
No.
I really don't.
I'd like to see him, like, from a distance.
I'd be okay with Kenobi.
Like, maybe at the end of the adventure or whatever, Obi-Wan just, like, walks over to the farmstead. Yeah.
Just see, like, the farmstead of him or something like
exactly.
that. With the twin sons behind it.
Yeah.
Okay.
But not... Well, I don't want to interact with Luke.
Yeah. I agree with you. So let's move on to episode 4. So this one is actually probably, out of all the episodes that we've seen so far, it's probably one of my favorites. Not just because there's Wedge in it. I know, Danya, you were like, what? But Sabine basically goes undercover as a cadet in the Empire's Elite Flight Academy to help save several young pilots who want to defect to the rebellion. In the end, though, she's only able to save two of them, both Wedge and Hobby, which is pretty cool to see Hobby in there, because you do see Hobby in like Empire Strikes Backs, and you know, he's a Y-Wing pilot and everything. So that's kind of cool to see that there's multiple characters that we know throughout the later series that she was able to interact with. But Sabine really got to shine in this episode, and I think that's maybe one of the reasons I like it a lot, because she really showed the ingenuity of the Rebels and what they were, just because after they were captured and everything, Wedge and Hobby are like, we need to save Sabine, and Sabine kind of like laughs at him because she's the one who breaks them out of prison and not her.
Yeah.
What do you guys think of this episode?
I really, really liked it. This is one of those, I feel like when Rebels isn't doing something like important, you know, it can always be a toss up whether it's like a good, like meaty episode or not. And I really like this one. I thought it really worked. It was so gratifying to see them go like, who's the competent one here? Oh, right. Not Ezra, Sabine, you know, and give her that responsibility, and to see her A, unfazed by that responsibility, but B, also just like totally rise to the occasion, and B, self-sacrificing and brave, and you know, all these things that we know she is, but she gets lost in the background so frequently. So I loved it, and I do like Wedge. I'm not an EU person, but I like what we see of him in Aftermath. He's one of the bright spots in Aftermath. So I've enjoyed that. I enjoyed it a lot. And
see, Danya?
Yeah.
See, Wedge isn't all bad. Wedge isn't bad.
I was so surprised. I was like, I didn't know it was allowed. Not like Wedge.
Sorry, I like Wedge. Anyway, one other thing is, did you guys get a chance to see the Star Wars show about this specific episode of Rebels?
No, because I literally just watched it before we started recording.
Okay, so one of the things is they have an interview with Dave Filoni, how they talked about how he was happy to be able to bring Wedge and Hobby in, because this is something that came from like the EU, where they came from Imperial Flight Academy. They're defectors. But they also wanted to work Biggs in.
I saw that in the Rebels recon.
It was actually Rebels Recon. Yeah, right. It wasn't the Star Wars show. But with Rebels Recon, they talked about how they wanted to tie Biggs into it, because if you remember, Sabine has like the checkerboard pattern on her armor, and Biggs has the checkerboard pattern on his helmet in episode 4. And they wanted to tie it in that, like, maybe Sabine's the one who actually painted that checkerboard pattern on Biggs' helmet, and that's how they all got tied together. But they haven't been able to, and that doesn't mean they're done with Biggs. Just means they haven't been able to get that story tied together yet. But it would have been great to have that too, right?
It was so interesting that they were like, and Pablo was like, yeah, we couldn't really like bring it to like an emotional place. I'm like, that sounds awesome to me. Like, I don't know what, like, I'm pretty picky about this, and that would have, I don't know, it sounds like it would have been really cool.
The only problem with it is that if it was Biggs, they would definitely date where they are with Rebels, because they've never dated where they are with Rebels, like, right before episode 4. If they took Biggs, because we know Biggs left one season before Luke leaves. So this would be 1 year then, or one Tatooine season, if you will, before A New Hope, if they had Biggs in that.
But so, they're going like, to date it would definitely him to date it anyway when we get up to, I mean, we're crossing over to a certain extent with Rogue One, right? So they're going to date
it. Well, we don't know where it's going to be. There's definitely, you know, there's definitely going to be some tie-up. Like they said, it's leading up to Rogue One, and Rogue One is right before A New Hope. So we don't know exactly where Rebels is, but I don't think it's going to cross Rogue One yet. But it's definitely getting closer to it. But if they had Biggs, it would definitely date it, because there's a hard comment in A New Hope that's about when Biggs leaves and stuff like that. So I wish they had it tied in there, but I would love to see a story with Biggs eventually in Rebels, just to kind of bring him in, because, you know, he gave his life to protect Luke and destroy the Death Star. So
Biggs, too soon.
Big ups for you. Too soon for Biggs.
But you know what does keep occurring to me, though? Like, all these episodes are, like, there's so much effort for so little gain, you know? Like, episode 2, or episode 1 was like, we got 5 Y-Wings, you know? And this one, we got 2 pilots! The reward that they're getting is so small compared to the effort expended, and I mean, I like that, because it's kind of emblematic of what the Rebellion is having to deal with, but it does kind of seem like, yeah. You know, yay, two pilots who might die tomorrow, you know.
No, yeah, considering like that, the first episode, you have like all the A-wings just die right away.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, it's definitely something where it's hard. It's you're seeing the effort the rebellion is putting into it. And I think this leads right into the new Rogue One trailer. But before we talk about it, let's talk about the poster real quick.
Oh, wait, hang on. First, we just have to mention Callus.
Oh, yeah.
Yes!
Seriously. So, yeah, speaking of Callus, yeah, what do you think about that? His debt is paid to Zeb.
I'm so confused, because wasn't he Fulcrum?
Is he Fulcrum?
That was so his voice. It was so his voice.
Yeah, well, people caught that fairly quickly, that Fulcrum is obviously what's Ahsoka's title, but there's lots of Fulcrums, and people said if you sped up or slowed down the voice, it's Callus's voice for this Fulcrum.
Yeah, I could hear it right away. I mean, like, it just sounded like David Oyelowo to me, and I was really confused. I thought it was a great moment, and I'm sure they'll continue this, but I was curious if, like, was he just saying that to her, and, like, that's one debt he's paid, but he's still, like, focusing on you know, helping the rebellion in little ways? Or is he really, like, was he connected with them to be Fulcrum for, like, one reason, for this one thing? Like, I need to settle this one score, and now I'm going to go back to being, you know, a nasty Imperial. Like, which one is it? I hope it's the first one.
I kind of feel that, like, he'll continue to be the Fulcrum, personally. I also feel like he was just giving that as his reason to Sabine, to be like, oh shit, I need to come up with something quick.
Uh-oh, did good. Must cover.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll agree with you completely on that, just because Wedge said it in the beginning of that episode, you know, that's not what he signed up for. And after Callus sees, you know, that experience in season 2 with Zeb, and Zeb actually helping him for a greater good and everything, and that even the rebels would have, you know, saved him from the planet and everything, it's one of those things where I think he realized the Empire is not what he signed up to be. It's changed pretty drastically to the evil galactic empire versus just a structure of order and everything. So I think he is going to be Fulcrum.
Yeah. And he does have that line in the first episode where when they're talking about Mr. Blue, oh my god, what's his name?
Thrawn.
Yes. Thrawn's like recent victory, and he's
Mr.
like
Blue, huh?
Yeah. they're talking about his victory, and he's like, oh well, remember how many like civilians died? And then the lady voiced by Steve Bloom's wife is like, oh yeah, that's fine, acceptable margins. And he's just like standing there. So I do think they're definitely moving toward him. I mean, he's totally going to die, but like, it's going to be a beautiful arc, I feel like.
I thought you were going to say, yeah, but it's going to be a beautiful death.
I mean, it might. It'll be so sad.
Well, it might be. It might be, you know, him saving somebody or something. Who knows?
I bet.
But yeah,
I bet
it's definitely going to be an interesting arc
of,
for Callus.
Yeah, I bet it's going to be some kind of, I don't know, mission or sacrificing himself for somebody or to destroy something. I bet that's where Callus is ending, and Zeb's gonna see it, and it's gonna be all feeling.
No,
no, but that's good.
I feel heart like it's breaking.
I know, but you know, he's alive for now.
All right, well, let's move on to the Rogue One poster that came out, which I personally think this theatrical poster is probably the best poster they've done for Rogue One yet. Not only do you have Vader hanging out in the silhouette in the top right corner, Jyn is right and center, and all the other characters from K2SO to Saw Gerrera to just, you see the bottom where they're on Scarif and the water and the AT-ACTs and the X-Wings. It's such a great poster that I absolutely love it. It's the wallpaper of my phone already. What do you guys think of this poster?
I love this poster so much. I love how Vader is just kind of subtly in the background. I thought it was really interesting that, like, parts of the Death Star Patton are, like, on Jin. Like, they've merged into, like, her clothing and, her like, onto, and her face and her hair. Like, I thought that was really interesting, which...
Could that be tying to her father building the Death Star? You know, there's a lot of... There's a lot of cool things in this poster. I agree with you on that. I thought that was a cool part.
I started thinking a little bit along the lines of, what if she's actually the key to actually making the Death Star work?
Ooh. You mean like he hid some plans in her memory or something?
Or something, yeah.
Her DNA, her blood.
Something like that.
Who knows? Maybe. I don't know. We'll see.
I was kind of just thinking it's very purposeful the way that they've put that, and they don't do things for no reason. So.
I actually feel like it might just be a really cool effect, and it's like, look how blended she is with this story, you know. But it could also be that, for sure. When are tickets going on sale?
I don't know. I'm waiting.
Apparently they go on sale on the 18th. So I would imagine that you
like
might
4 days.
Have them go on. Yeah, you might. They might go on sale around the same time, but
I don't know. I have a Fandango alerts, and I still haven't got an alert when they're going to go on sale. It kind of bums me out.
Yeah, my thing is that I can't see it at midnight.
Why not?
Because it's like between the Thursday and Friday, and I'll be starting a new job, and I won't have earned enough time off to be able to take the Friday off.
Oh, that's tragic.
I know.
Bummer. Oh, well. I'll see it at midnight. Don't worry.
Yeah.
Mikhail, what do you think of this poster? Anything else about it?
I love it. I mean, I have to say my persistent frustration with the story is kind of highlighted with this, which is like, it's awesome. We have, like, obviously Jin, lady, main character, amazing, and then a million bajillion men, you know? But like, whatever. But other than that, it's really, really cool. And it looks different, you know, like definitely the palm trees and the, you know, AT-ATs in the water and, you know, this kind of big crew of people all looks very different. It's almost like the poster, like, from top down gets less and less familiar, you know, as you would, I guess, scroll through it, because we have Vader, we have the Death Star, we know that, and then we have Jin, and then we have, like, the new crew and all of that. But, yeah, no, it's a badass poster. It is absolutely badass. This team looks really cool. I can't wait to see how they interact, and, yeah.
Yeah, and this is released one day before the trailer. So let's move on to our spotlight topic of deconstructing this trailer. So before we get started, I want to say just first impressions. I personally thought this was the best trailer yet for Rogue One. And I'm really hoping that this had some of the reshot footage, because it definitely made at least the story that's told in this trailer, I thought, made it stand out that much more than the other previous trailers that we had seen, the teaser and everything else. Like, I love this. What'd you guys think?
I was really confused about, like, Jin as a character in all of the previous...
Oh, there's a lot to talk about with that.
Yeah, so in the previous trailers, I kind of, like, got the feeling that Jin was very much just, like, almost like a rebelling teenager, almost, in respect to, like, she's just going around doing her thing and getting into trouble. But then this trailer, like, gave her almost a completely different personality. She was very earnest and seemed like she was just caught up in the middle of everything and potentially is being used by both sides, but in, like, to different ends. Obviously, when you see the bit with Jin when she's a lot younger with her father, and knowing what we do about that book that's coming out, is it Catalyst?
Yes, and I have heard nothing but amazing things about Catalyst.
Yeah, so...
just nothing but amazing things.
Which we know is going to be about her and her father and mother prior to Rogue One. You know, I feel like she's just a pawn being used by both sides, which is a far more intriguing story to me now. And I'm... far, far, far more interested in learning more about Jin. Because before I was just like, oh, she's just like a tough and rough around the edges badass female character just getting into trouble and kicking ass, but there's a lot more to her. She actually has a softer edge. Like, the whole thing where she's, like, being really optimistic and kind of, like, getting everyone to, like, believe in hope and stuff like that. And I was like, this is, like, a completely different personality coming across in the trailer. And I don't know if it's because just of the way they've cut it or whether this is down to reshoots or whatever, but I was super into this trailer, like, a lot. It was by far the most impressive trailer that they've had. Also, we got to see more of Krennic, and we also finally got to see Galen Erso, which finally, feel like I've been waiting so long to just see his face. So,
and Bodhi also.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Bodhi finally showed up.
Yes! Yeah!
Yeah, Bodhi finally does some stuff, too.
And also is the one who comes up with the call sign.
Yeah. I know, I feel like he's recording that, and he's like, I'm gonna be in the trailer. But I like the trailer a lot. I don't think it, just for pure, like, exhilaration factor, I don't think it quite beats the first one for me, because that was going from 0 to 60 on everything about Rogue One. So that's just a personal thing. It's not really, like, a quality thing. It's just a personal response. And I do really like it, and I love the fact that we have... And they almost, like, they almost cheated, and we're just like, hey, here's Jin's, like, motivation in the movie. Like, here it is. You know, flashbacks and trailers are quite rare, at least from my experience. So they definitely went with that. And they're rare in Star Wars, so we're getting kind of a 1-2 punch with that. But it was very effective, and it definitely gave us a context in which to understand, like, why we're here, what we're doing. And I love seeing the team. I think it was a really cool look at the bad guys. I like that they had Vader, but didn't go like, look, Vader, you know, like they did at the end of the last one. I felt like this was much more kind of like, yeah, he's a scary part of the Empire, and like, he's part of this, and like, we don't have to hype it more than that. But I will say, in terms of Jin, I'm a little wary, because I liked the idea that she came out this, like, crusty, hard-edged, kind of annoying, like, I'm not gonna be sweet because I that's not who I am, you know, like, to you know, in the first trailer, like, her I rebel line, I wasn't super keen on it, but it definitely showed me who she was, and I liked that they might have been going with a kind of female character who wasn't super likable. And it's possible that that's still in there, but I don't want them to have softened her character so that she's nicer, you know?
I don't think they softened her character. I think they just kind of found a balance, you know, in the trailers by themselves. I think they finally struck a balance between her character.
But she doesn't do, I mean, she does so nothing. She's very, very passive in this trailer. Like, she is, like...
Yeah.
I mean, the first trailer, see, we have her... But it even
reveals certain things, like... In the first trailer, you see her at the end in the... what people were kind of speculating, TIE pilot outfit or what. You see it's actually a gunnery outfit that she sneaks onto the Death Star with, looks like Cassian and someone else. But she's not wearing the helmet from the first trailer. You know, where she's wearing it in this trailer. So you start to see a lot of... Like, this trailer answers a lot of questions from the other trailers that we had. Like, what was she wearing? What is she doing? Well, it's like now it's obvious that they're sneaking onto the Death Star, and, you know, they're wearing, you know, Cassian's wearing a Imperial officer outfit, and she's wearing a tie, you know, a Death Star gunner outfit, which, and they have, was looking at it real quick right now, it looks like they have K2 with them. So it's definitely something where it answers more, and you see the same shot of where she says, may the Force be with us, you know, she says that at the end, I think, of the, not the second trailer, but the... Was it the what do you call it, the celebration reel? And so they have, you know, they have that, and it's just one of those things where I think it adds to her character. You know, I think you have to take all the trailers, because I think they all show different sides of her.
Right. I'm just afraid that those
change her character.
I mean, I'm not like panicking. I'm not gonna, you know, I may go on a feminist rant about this, but I won't do it yet. But I I don't know. I am a little cautious. I think it's notable that in the first trailer she was, you know, literally kicking ass, you know, and just spitting fire. And, you know, the second trailer was kind of similar. And then in this one, she is very passive. She gets rescued from prison. She, you know, her father, like, walks off and she watches him. She is asking questions to the rebels. She's not talking, like, to them. Like, later on, she's just like, you know, we have hope. And it's like, wait, who are you? So it might all but totally...
She also has the most important line, though. Rebellions are built on hope.
I know, but it's not like... I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, because, you know, when she says... She has that... I think that's probably the most important line of all the trailers so far, is rebellions are built on hope. Because in this trailer, they specifically say they're talking about how, at this point, the rebellion is looking at the Death Star, this super weapon. And they say, if the Empire has this, what hope do we have? And then Jyn responds with, rebellions are built on hope. And something I threw in the notes here, and I want to read it, is not a spoiler, but I'm going to read something real quick. It's a period of civil war. Rebel spaceships striking from a hidden base have won their first victory against the evil Galactic Empire. During the battle, Rebel spies managed to steal secret plans to the Empire's ultimate weapon, the Death Star, an armored space station with enough power to destroy an entire planet. So this is the beginning of the title crawl for A New Hope. Like, literally, this entire series, you know, we know this film ends 10 minutes before A New Hope starts. And with Jyn saying that, you know, but rebellions are built on hope, this ties directly to A New Hope, you know, episode 4. And we know that they're going to win. You know, these rebels, whether Jyn survives, you know, Saw Gerrera survives, you know, Saw had, you know, mechanical legs like Darth Maul. Yeah. But you see that in this trailer, which is really cool.
Oh, Saw is totally dying, like, right after he says that line.
Like, oh, no, yeah.
Save the rebellion, save the dream. And then now I get to live save for another dream. 40 years. No.
No, I agree. But the whole thing is, like, I get it that Jyn's character has changed from the different trailers. But I think, if anything, I feel like she's stronger in this one, because it literally leads to, like, a pivotal point for, like, the entire Star Wars saga that started it all. Like, she's talking about hope that they still have. Like, she's the one who still believes in it. And then it cuts to, like, a shot of, like, all the different guys that are like, yeah, like, they all smiling about it, like their head nodding, like they agree with her. And, like, she is this strong leader in it. Take it, I think the beginning part does kind of soften her as a character, maybe make her a little bit more likable sometimes versus the feisty one that we saw, you know, I Rebel. But I think it just makes her a stronger character, because we're now seeing more of her in different aspects of the film. I don't know. We'll have to wait till the movie comes out, but I really like it. And like I said, that line that she delivers ties directly into that title crawl from A New Hope, which I just think is just awesome.
Well, I mean, we'll definitely see. It totally could be a, you know, normal character progression. I'm just nervous about them, like, softening her to make her cuddly, you know?
I don't think she's going to be cuddly by any stretch of the imagination. I just feel like she's going to be allowed to be vulnerable at points, which, you know, in a time of war, you can be. But I feel like we'll see glimpses of that, but she seems to be able to steel herself very, very quickly, which I think is really cool. But I'm super, super excited for this film.
Yeah,
so
what
do you guys think of the music in this one? We've previously talked about the music in the other trailers and how it was really well done, different things. And we know that they've changed composers for Rogue One. Mid filming and everything. But what do you guys think of the music for the trailer?
Isn't the music usually just trailer music, though?
Yeah, I'm.
Sometimes
I don't think it will have anything to do. I'm sure it's different people working on it. But that said, it was super effective and really good. And I hope they carry, if not obviously the exact theme or the exact you know, music, then the same tones, the same ideas, which I have no question that they'll do that, because, like, we're just not going to use any of the old, you know, the Imperial March, that's overdone, like, they're not going to do that. You know?
Oh, no, those motifs will show up again.
Yeah.
But I will say, like, the music in this trailer compared to the other trailers, like, I went back and watched all the other trailers in this trailer and kind of compared them, like, kind of closed my eyes and just listened to them. This one had a wider variety of music, both uplifting music and the dark music and everything. the first teaser trailer, which was great, you know, had the siren of the alarm for the Death Star about to fire, and it was very dark and Empire, you know, Vader's theme, very dark and kind of slow and ominous of the Star Wars theme. The next trailer and even the, what do you call it, the celebration wheel had some darker tones to it also, which I think the trailers also reflected that. Whereas this one kind of showed, I think it comes down to it showed hope again. Like it had brighter music, brighter tones. It made me feel more Star Wars like versus the other ones kind of felt almost too dark. But I liked that it was going to be a darker film. This one, like, it definitely felt tone wise in line with the other Star Wars films. And I don't know if that was reshoots in this trailer, music, or what. But definitely the music on this one, the tone wise, I felt was more in line with the rest of the Star Wars films than the other previous trailers.
I'd agree with that. There was something about the music that was kind of treading the line between the previous trailers and A New Hope. Like, it was kind of in this middle ground instead of being too far one way or the other. But I like the music for it. I don't know that it's actually going to be music that we'll hear in the film, because typically trailers have the music done specifically for the trailers, whether it's by an outside company that cuts the trailer together, or it's just done in-house with a small mm-hmm. piece of music made to that trailer. So it'll be interesting to see if we hear anything familiar when we see.
Yeah, I'm sure some of the motifs will be there.
It's really not long now before it comes out.
I know, it's coming up December.
It was so funny because Karen was talking to me the other day, and we were just like, oh, yeah, and it's like Rogue One, and we're super, super excited. And I was like, yeah, it's the next big film. Like, it's like we've got like really nothing until we get there. And someone was basically like, Doctor Strange and Fantastic Beasts. And I was like, I'm going to see Fantastic Beasts.
Aww.
I'm not going to see Doctor Strange. Throwing that out there.
I probably will, but I'm not going to be happy about it.
All right. So I do want to talk about some of the visuals. So there's a couple of scenes that stood out to me visually. At 41 seconds into the trailer, you see the U-Wing flying over Jedha. And it's flying over a rock formation, which looks like a giant statue that had been fallen over of a Jedi holding a lightsaber.
It does. And I'm oh, my God.
That really cool? Like, because I know we've learned a little about Jedha being this ancient, like, you know, this ancient planet where people would come to, is strong in the Force, you know, who knows what. We've talked about Kyber Crystal being there, which is what powers the Death Star. You know, we've had all these theories about it. But at 41 seconds in, it's really cool. And, like, I would love, like, if they take this stuff, like, even if they did, like, an Old Republic series, like, having Jedha be a planet and seeing these giant statues of Jedi, like, standing up would just be so cool. But just even seeing it lying on the ground and then flying over it looks pretty darn impressive.
Yeah, it took me the second watch to realize what it was. Because the first time I watched it, I was just, like, super hyped and, like, yeah, Star Wars Rogue One trailer, yeah! And then the second time I watched it, I was like, is that a person? And then I went back and paused it and looked at it, and I was like, oh, shit, it's a Jedi!
Yeah, it was really good. Like, I was impressed with it. What is there anything else that you guys thought was visually impressive? There's a couple other scenes I want to bring up.
So much in this trailer was just beautiful. Like, if this is any indication of what the cinematography is going to be like through the whole film, it's going to be breathtaking.
Yeah.
It's just...
Yeah.
So many of the shots are, like, just incredible.
Yeah, I want to bring up at 151, seeing the Y-Wings and X-Wings fly through, I don't even know what planet it is, because it's dark and it's on fire, but seeing them fly through that canyon at night, and then, you know, obviously, just a couple seconds later on, you see the X-Wings fly through what I would assume is part of construction of the Death Star in space at 157, yeah. Like, it just looks you know, it looks amazing. Like, visually, like, I've always loved space fights. Like, that's one of the reasons why New Hope was one of my favorite films before Empire was, when I was younger. Just because I loved Luke Skywalker and the X-Wing, you know, the space battle and everything. And just seeing these iconic ships that we grew up watching, you know, X-Wings and Y-Wings, fly through these just beautiful landscapes, you know, the space and everything. Like, it feels like I'm back in A New Hope again. And it makes me so excited. So, visually, like, those two scenes right there also really add a lot for it to me.
I also just, I mean, I'm sure this has been mentioned before, but I just really appreciate the variety of landscapes that we're getting. You know, it's not all gray, it's not all ugly, you know.
It's not all sand, it's not all
exactly.
Snow, it's not all forest.
Yeah.
You know, we have a planet that is nice water, palm trees. Mm-hmm. We have one that is, you know, desert again. We have, you know, there is also another scene that kind of interesting too. I think we talked about it too, where we had some stormtroopers in a similar scene. There's a rocky, it's at 8 seconds, 9 seconds. I'm looking at my notes. I took a bunch of screenshots. At 9 seconds in, you see, Jin's father, and he's standing there next to looks like a moisture evaporator, kind of what Luke had on Tatooine, but they're on a different type of planet, and he's just staring out a big vista. It's just a really nice shot, like an opening shot to the trailer, and just kind of sets the mood for everything. And I really like it because it has things that pull back to the original trilogy, more so than the prequels or anything like that. So I really am visually impressed with this trailer more so than the other ones, even though the other ones had like the over the top, like, oh my gosh, the Death Star, they're putting the cone into it and everything. This one is just as a trailer, like, I can see why this is the final trailer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons you guys should see Doctor Strange is because this trailer is going to be Doctor Strange, just so you can see it on IMAX and everything.
Nope. But I'm not paying for an IMAX ticket to Doctor Strange.
No.
I'm just saying, I would do it to see the trailer.
I wouldn't.
But yeah,
can I walk out right after it?
Sure. So what do you guys, so anything else visually you guys think stood out?
Everything.
Anything, everything.
Okay. I'm just really intrigued by the story they set up at the beginning. I'm really into the stuff with her dad and what's going to go on there. I don't know. I think it sounds really, I mean, I feel like we could write the story, you know, we could be like, oh, you know, and her father made a deal with Krennic, and she resents him because she feels like he abandoned her and, you know, doesn't remember that or feels like he broke his promise, you know, like, there's a million tropes that could fit into this, but to mm-hmm. me, the story that is, the storyline, basically, you know, that is suggested, is really, really fascinating, and, I mean, yeah, I'm just super into that.
Yeah, and I really like, and I hope, I don't want everyone from the Rogue One crew to die. I want some people to survive it.
But then what do we do with them after?
Well, they might be there. We don't see them. Like, they're doing something else. Their story has been told. But the reason why I really want some of them to survive, or at least some of the characters, like, we know Mon Mothma survives. We know a couple other people survive it and stuff like that. But I really want, because of the title crawl from A New Hope, you know, Rebel spaceships striking from a hidden base have won their first victory against the evil Galactic Empire. You know, they've managed to steal the plans of the Empire's ultimate weapon. Like, I love the fact that, you know, this spoiler, if you will, was predicted, you know, 40 years beforehand. and literally, like, it's right there. Like, if you wanted to know what Rogue One is about, read the first paragraph of, or the first two paragraphs of the title call from A New Hope. Like, that's what it is. So I don't want them all to die from it. You know, maybe Jin has to, maybe Krennic has to, maybe, you know, maybe Bodhi survives, you know. Saw Gerrera probably is not, just because of what we saw in the trailer. Like, let the dream live on. Like, it definitely is. This trailer is all the feels. It really is. And visually, story, music, everything, this trailer was probably the, I understand why it's the last trailer before the film is released. It is absolutely phenomenal. I cannot say enough great things, but I've watched it way too many times. So that's all I'm going to say about it. Any other thoughts on the trailer, guys?
I feel like that shot of him when he's like hiding behind that thing, that to me felt like a pre-death shot. Like, I'm going to do this final thing, you know, I don't know. I'm very interested to see how thoroughly this team of people is decimated. I hope it's not. I have this idea in my head that like Jin is like the last one surviving, and she just like gives Mon Mothma the plans or something, and then dies. Like she's like so injured or something. But I don't know. I hope they don't all die. I agree. It's true. Like it does sound at the end of or at the beginning of A New Hope like there is some hope for them. Like it's not like everyone died to get the plans. It's like it was very tough to get the plans, and a lot of people died, but not everyone. So hopefully we'll be able to buy some Funkos that aren't doomed. Like.
You know, it's interesting.
But I think Cassian's doomed.
I really want to see what leads up to them getting the plans to Princess Leia. Because the last part of the New Hope title crawl, which I haven't read, is Princess Leia races home aboard her starship, custodian of the stolen plans. So she's the one who has the stolen plans that can save her people and restore freedom to the galaxy. So how does, of all the things that we see, you know, them from the secret base with Mon Mothma and everyone there around the thing showing the Death Star, talking about what they have to do to get the plans. How do they get to Princess Leia and her ship?
Like without showing us Princess Leia. Because
without showing us Princess Leia. Like how do they get to her ship?
I guess they could have Captain Antilles.
Maybe. We know Captain Antilles was there. So it would just be interesting to see how all that gets to it. Because we know that they are going to steal those plans. They succeed. And, it's really one of those things where I don't want them all to die. Because I want one of them to be on. Maybe it's one of the guys that you see at the very beginning of, A New Hope that wait for the stormtroopers to come
on
Princess Leia's ship and then dies. Like maybe that's one of them. And like you see, he's the guy who runs to the ship and they get on it. And we don't know what happens from there. We assume, and then you can see it's like, hey, that's the same guy that died right at the beginning of A New Hope. But it'll be something, and I'm excited for that.
Is it December 18th? Yeah,
I know. What day is it? We're like exactly 2 months away from, at least if you're seeing it that night.
Yeah. 16th. All right. Any other thoughts, guys, on the trailer?
I think I'm good.
Yeah.
Other than, right.
I know, right? All the feels from it. All right. Well, thank you all for listening to another episode of Resistance Radio. Feel free to reach out to us on Twitter at Our Radio Podcast or on Facebook at facebook.com/Resistance Radio Podcast. As always, I'm Mikey B.
I'm Danya.
And I'm Michal.
Thanks for listening.
We'll be back in a week this time.
I know, right? Yeah.